All right, so I'm here today with Boyd, and I'm not quite sure how to pronounce your last name. You did it for me just a moment ago.
Mulder.
Oh, well, that's actually a lot easier.
It's pretty easy.
It was a little more exciting. Before that Austrian kind of flair that you gave it a minute ago, the Mulder, but yeah, so here with Boyd.
Okay.
And Boyd, what is it exactly that you do for Microsoft?
All right, well, I'm the product unit manager for XNA, and that means that I run the team that's building and designing the XNA product. XNA actually means more than just what we're doing. It's kind of trying to have it mean the services and educational materials and a bunch of stuff. But what we're focused on is delivering Game Studio Express, which is what will enable everyday normal people to write games and run them on their Windows machine and on their Xbox, and makes it much easier to develop games.
Okay, so I definitely want to get to that stuff. Actually, I really want to get to that stuff, but first,
sure.
So what does XNA actually stand for? What is it exactly? I mean, where did it come from?
So it's kind of a long story. It was about 2.5 years ago, and they were getting ready for a GDC, and they wanted to tell a story about developers and about how important it was to have great developer tools and a program around it. And it wasn't that long before GDC, and they needed a name for this idea that Jay Allard had. And they kind of, I know, how about XNA? It sounds sort of like DNA, and we'll call it cross-platform next-generation architecture, and the name sort of stuck, and I'm kind of stuck with it now, but it's okay.
So you guys made up the acronym first and the meaning afterward?
Pretty much, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, I mean, they had the gist of, we want a program for developers.
Yeah.
Because it's way the heck too hard to make games.
Okay, yeah.
And they knew they wanted to make it simpler, and exactly what that meant was a little unclear, but they were committing to go and figure it out.
Okay, so I'm game development kind of stupid, right? Like, I've done a little bit of stuff on my own in the way that a tinkerer would, you know, like I played with GDI and all of that, and please don't laugh at me. And all that, but I mean, where did XNA come from? Is it it's an evolution of DirectX, or is that a total? Because that's kind of how I hear it described.
Where did XNA come from? Well, we started. Okay, so 2.5 years ago, when we started on the XNA path, it was actually been pretty interesting. We started off focused on professional game studios because they spend way the heck too much money making games, and it's too difficult, and they spend too much time on it, and there's too much risk.
It's like Hollywood. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot like Hollywood. And we went and talked to a lot of game studios, and we talked to a lot of professionals, and we found a couple of things out pretty quickly. First off, there's very poor build tools, very poor processes around how things get done. So,
is a lot of it homegrown? And
yeah, it's all
sort
it's
of
all,
okay.
It's all homegrown. Plus, they spend a lot of time doing prototyping, and then they throw the prototypes away, and if you can do two platforms, half the time the game teams like chuck the first game and rewrite it from scratch. And
for the second platform?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a lot of that going on. So there was a lot of really obvious, easy things that we could do. But we didn't just want to do obvious, easy things. We were building our catalog of things that we wanted to do that would really impact the industry. One of those has always been, we want to get consumers to actually participate in the game development process.
Mm-hmm.
Let normal people and people who like to play games have a creative voice in what they're playing. You can see all kinds of parallels in the music industry and the movie industry, where as the tools have gotten better and the internet distribution's gotten better, that people are able to participate more. And we didn't think it was possible. Bringing .NET over to the Xbox was pretty much a requirement for a lot of reasons, including security, and it looked really hard. So we started an itty-bitty little project with the .NET Compact Framework team to go off and investigate if it was possible.
To build like so you wanted to use like a version of the Compact Framework sort of on the Xbox, or is that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So it's a customized version of the Compact Framework running in user mode on the Xbox and the sandbox to keep everything safe. And it turned out that they did a great job, and it works. And once we realized that we could do it, and not only could we do it, that it would work really well, I'm like, all right, great. Well, we can turn on the ultimate get the consumers going, and then later we'll finish up all the work we did for the professional guys.
So then with the .NET Framework on there, I mean, because I have a 360, and I'll just tell you, first of all, that I mean, I think it's the, and this isn't just like my Microsoft badge talking, you know, this thing, that I really think it's the best consumer electronics device I've ever purchased in my life, because it does like 5 million different things. But is there already .NET stuff running on there?
No, not yet.
Oh, really? Okay.
Not yet.
Is the framework on there?
Nope. Not yet.
Oh, so this is going to be like a push that is going to happen eventually?
Well, what will happen is later this year, it will become available in the Xbox Live Marketplace, and then you can download it.
Like, will it be called the .NET Compact Framework?
No, it will be called the... I don't know the exact wording. I think we're still playing with the exact wording. It's the XNA game subscription, or the XNA runtime, or something like that.
Sweet, okay.
Right, the marketing people are still fleshing out the exact naming of it.
The Windows XNA, you know, developer tools studio set.
No, it won't be that bad. Okay, it won't be that bad. I think we're limited to 20 characters, so it kind of...
And so they'll be able to download this version of the Compact Framework, you know, this specialized version of it.
Right, complete with the runtime. And you know, the runtime, the framework, a bunch of other stuff. It'll show up somewhere in the games blade. And then you'll be able to go in and say, all right, here's a bunch of games I've got. I want to play them. Or, more interestingly, connect to a PC. And then you've got the tools running on your PC. Visual Studio Express, so it's even free there. You download our stuff, plug it into Visual Studio, and now you're able to connect to your local Xbox, write your games on your PC, compile them, send them over, run them on your Xbox, hit a breakpoint, debug it.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's way cool. It's actually really cool.
That's actually really, really cool. So you can essentially take your PC and you can sync up with your Xbox, and okay. All right. I wouldn't ordinarily pause in an interview, but I didn't actually expect you to tell me that. You know, that, like, something that cool. That's actually really, really incredible. So who is this, like, targeted at, then?
Perfectly honest, in the beginning, you're going to need to be fairly technical. You'll need to know C#. Having a background with MDX, Managed DirectX, would help.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of gets back to your question about where did it come from. Did it come from DirectX or not?
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I'd say no, right? We didn't come from DirectX, and yet, at the same time, yes.
Okay.
Right? What we've done with the XNA graphics part of the framework is the evolution of MDX. It's the same guy who wrote MDX, Tom Miller's on our team, and he's writing all the graphics stuff for us. And so we've got, you know, the next round of where that framework is going.
Okay.
It completely targeted for games, right? It's all about making it much simpler and easier to write games. It's still going to be fairly difficult, and, you know, over time we'll make it easier.
You have to know, like, math and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So you need to know what a vector is, and you need to know what a matrix is.
And once you get past that, you're all right.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
But here's an example. A lot of people, that, you know, they decide they want to go write a game, and they want to write a 3D engine, and they've studied the math, and they mm-hmm. study the theory behind it, and they sit down, all right, let's do it. All right, how do I get my model from Max or Maya or any of the other big programs, and you get them into your game?
So they get caught up in having to write some sort of an import engine.
That's actually really hard.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to actually translate all these models, and you have to get them twisted around right into the game. And that's actually really, really hard. So in the first beta that we shipped this summer of XNA, we gave the version of the framework and the runtime engine on Windows and said, mm-hmm. all right, people, go off and start making games. But there was nothing to help you get your models into the game.
Okay.
Right. We're about to ship our beta 2. Oh, hey, I can announce something. We're about to ship our beta 2. We announced it on our blog.
So, but this is kind of a scoop, huh?
Well, kind of not really. We actually put it up on the blog a day ago, but yeah, our beta 2 is about done. I think we're trying to be code complete on it this week.
Very good.
And say we're done with it. And the beta 2 will have the content pipeline in it. And the content pipeline is a tool which is all about, here's a bunch of models, we know how to read the models, let's ka-ching, 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 do a bunch of transforms on them and stick them out in a way that's easy to load and get people going. So you don't have to worry about that whole content importing thing.
Oh, yeah, that's really cool, because I used to hang out with a lot of game devs. I went to this game development group, even though I don't develop games myself. I was just curious about how it worked, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like 45, you know, 50, 99, 110% of the time, they were actually just talking about how to get their models in. You
know, it's way too hard.
To figure out how to do it. So
it's
you're going to have a way to go out and pull models in from some of the most popular modeling programs in?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's actually really
exactly.
cool, too.
Exactly.
All right, so you're going to kind of take that weight off the developer's shoulders. And,
right.
All right, very, very good. And
we support the FBX plugin, which is Filmbox, which is basically an engine that goes and translates lots of different formats. So we actually support a huge number of programs.
That's very cool. Yeah. Okay. And so somebody develops this application, and or this game, I should say. I'm still in business dev mode, but they can run it. There's going to be an XNA runtime, I would imagine, for you can run it on Windows, you can run it on Xbox. And is there any kind of, like, I mean, how does it work? Like, what if somebody wants to sell the game? Is there any licensing issue there?
I think we're still working out the exact terms in the EULA. Just remember, in the beginning, in this first round of it, it's about getting students and hobbyists up and running and getting them going, getting people making games. Absolutely, we want to have as many games as possible. Mm-hmm. On the Xbox side, there's no real distribution mechanism.
Okay.
Right? This is very much about developing and getting people innovating. On the Windows side, we're more open to it.
Sure.
And I'm not going to comment on the EULA until we actually...
Of course, good idea,
Yeah,
because lawyers can probably smell that sort of conversation from down the hallway.
But I can say, in the beginning, in this first round, on the Windows side, you'll need to have .NET 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
You'll need to have, I think, DirectX 9.0c, minimum of Windows XP SP2.
Okay. And are there starter kits that come with the XNA Development Studio?
Oh, yeah. Right, so the main starter, the first starter kit we're doing, which... Beta 2 will have the next version of this starter kit integrated with the content pipeline and a whole pile of bugs fixed because the one we shipped in Beta 1.
It's a Beta 1.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
So it's a game called Space War. Two spaceships, they fly around and shoot at each other. Mm-hmm. But the cool thing is it's actual real live 3D models. There's transparency, there's shaders, there's all this stuff. So we're trying to show people how to go about putting these games together. And we've got several more starter packs that are in the works, and they're really cool.
Can you tell me anything about them, or is this all, like, top secret right now?
I'm going to let the marketing people decide.
That's fine. Okay, all right, I understand. Yeah,
but
don't tell me anything
really
you can't
cool.
tell me, of course.
Really
okay,
cool.
You can say they're really cool.
Yeah, they're really cool.
Can you, about how many lines is the Space War game? Do you know off the top of your head?
I don't.
Yeah, I'm just curious, just since, I mean, I've done so much business development, and, I mean, the game world is so just completely different that it's one of those things I'm always curious
about. It's kind of weird, because when people talk about the games, they like to talk about how many lines is the rendering engine.
Mm-hmm.
And because rendering engines in the past are always really big.
But you've taken care of that.
So. Yeah, so our rendering engines tend to be pretty small, and then most of the game just becomes game logic.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the left stick was moved, and add an angle to the ship, and then, so most of your game logic is that kind of stuff. And of course, it depends on what kind of game you want to make and how far you want to go with that stuff.
Well, let's say you wanted to do, like, a simple 2D platform, or just for starters, okay? Mm-hmm. I've never approached game development before, let's say. And I have, I'm just bad at it. But let's say that I just wanted to do something with, like, 2D sprites against a static background. About how hard would that be to do? Do I still have to use 3D models, even though they're 2D sprites, or...?
It's still a little bit hard right now, but it's mm-hmm. getting easier, and we're working with partners who have tools that will make it a lot easier. The Garage Games guys that we've been spending a lot of time with, they've got tools that make 2D games really, really easy. We have sprite support, but really everything in the framework is assuming that there's a three-dimensional underpinning to the whole thing.
Because that's most games nowadays.
Yeah, and that's where games are going. And even casual games, I think that you could put together a 2D casual game, which still has 3D models in it. Imagine, here's a marble on a stage, and it's a 2D kind of thing. And it's moving around in two dimensions, but it's actually a 3D model with shadows and noise and all that.
Okay. And so, just out of curiosity, I mean, like, once this really gets going, and I don't know if you can even answer this question, I've already sort of, kind of gone here, but do you think that eventually there might be a possibility of people being able to develop their own games and sell them on Xbox Marketplace?
Yes.
So that could actually happen. Okay, now that'd be really cool. And
now that, there's all kinds of caveats around that.
Mm-hmm.
Xbox Live Arcade is a managed portfolio business. The Xbox in general is a managed portfolio business.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be conscious of that. If you're going to be selling a game, then you'll probably need to have a license agreement and all the normal Xbox sorts of things.
What does it mean, managed portfolio? What does that mean exactly?
Oh, it means that there's not 100,000 games that are available at any given time. We're going for the best games.
Of course, right. You don't want to flood the marketplace with a bunch of not as good games.
Well, think of it as there's a difference between... Let's do the whole movie analogy, right? You've got big blockbuster movies that are in the theaters.
Mm-hmm.
You've got smaller movies. You've got Sundance movies. You've got made-for-TV movies. You also have, YouTube and Soapbox and people who are making their own movies and putting them up there and getting some fame and notoriety for them. it's not necessarily impacting the big guys, right? They're still making money. They're still making their big movies. They're still selling their big movies, and they still have a healthy, robust business. But now it's being augmented by all these regular people who are being creative and changing the flavor of the conversation to the point where now trends that are happening in the user-created space are actually starting to affect the movies that are coming up.
Hmm.
Now, we're actually quite interested in that sort of model with video games.
So what if you had... So, I mean, are you saying that there might be some thinking around the idea of creating something similar to YouTube for Xbox? Like, where instead of saying, okay, we've got, like, the whole Xbox 360 catalog, and we've got the Live Arcade catalog, you might have some separate area, which is just, like, a user space where they could share games for free and trade them and things like that? Or?
Yeah, the details are completely, you know, this is what I'm spending all my time on right now.
Of course, yeah.
It's trying to figure out how this actually could come together. But this is a big part of the vision that we've been talking about. At Game Fest over the summer, Peter Moore and others, and we've all been talking about bringing other people into the club. Video gaming has been sort of like a country club, where if you're a member, then you get to make the game, and if you're not a member, well, you're not in.
Right.
We're trying to open it up and bring everybody into being able to make games.
Well, definitely, because, I mean, historically, I can't think of a single other console in the universe, and, I mean, I don't have all the knowledge of all the consoles in the universe. You know, there might be a couple,
right,
not up here in Monongahela, but, I mean, has anybody else done anything even remotely like this before?
Well, Sony's tried. They've got NetEurosy, and I'm actually not sure how to pronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
But they've tried to put Linux onto their stations, and they've let people write their own games.
Just using like SDL or something like that, or?
Well, it's been hard to get it to go, and it hasn't been enough of those consoles to make a huge impact. It's one thing to make technology available to people,
right,
so that they can write their games. It's another thing to make it approachable and easy. I mean, I'm not kidding when I say that the content pipeline is an integral and important piece of what we're doing.
Because
that step of getting from the tools into the video game is actually really, really hard, and you have to make that really easy.
I've definitely heard game devs talk about that aspect of it, yeah.
And we want people, you know, just think of it as we want people focused on the game logic.
Uh-huh.
What makes my game fun?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want people so much focused on, how do I put a yellow dot in the screen?
Right now,
actually, it's still surprisingly difficult if you have to use a shader to do it. But, you know, we're getting there.
Okay, cool. So then what's going on here really is, it is brand stinking new.
Pretty much. I mean, like I'm trying to say, there's a little bit of precedent in people just, all right, let's let people write their own code. But we're trying to take it to a whole new level.
Mm-hmm.
We want lots and lots and lots of people writing games and running it on their Xboxes and running it on their PCs. I don't want to de-emphasize the fact that we want these games running on Windows as well. Everything we're doing is equally about getting it running on both platforms.
Yeah, I think this is one of those things though where it's really cool that it runs on both platforms, but there's this geek factor where, like, the first time I wrote a mobile app and I was able to send it to my phone and see my own code running.
Totally.
I mean, it was Hello World, right? But if I could write Hello World for the Xbox, and I had my own Hello World app running on the Xbox, I mean, I'd flip out, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just...
Totally.
Because it feels like an off-limits world, you know? It feels like someplace where I shouldn't be allowed to play.
Mm-hmm.
And so to get to go in there and do that is really exciting. And so, do you expect to see, or are there already even perhaps communities springing up of people who are... So they've got their Xbox 360 games that they swap and they trade and...
Well, no. We haven't enabled anything on the Xbox 360 yet.
That's right.
That will get turned on when we actually ship,
mm-hmm.
right? And that part is not free, right? Getting your games running on your Windows machine, getting the tools, all that's free.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Meaning that you bought Windows.
Yeah, you have to buy Windows and a computer and stuff. But
exactly. But on the Xbox, there's a charge to get your code running. What we have seen so far with the beta is there's a lot of blogs and there's a lot of sites and a lot of effort in the community of, all right, let's go start making games. And
cool.
Some of them are really kind of clever and they're really cool. There's a guy who's making a flying game where you've got kind of World War II airplanes that are flying around. There's a dude doing Pirates versus Ninjas.
Where can people go to find this stuff?
You just search around on the web. There's all kinds of XNA community sites now.
So just do like a search for XNA community or XNA homebrew or...
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right, very, very cool. Actually, I had a question back
or
there.
Or XNA.
Just XNA in general. So the thing I wanted to clarify, you know, because I'm sure that some people, you know, watching the video might think, oh man, you got to pay to get it on the 360, you know, but the thing is, you don't have to modify your code at all, right? You just write it on the Windows version and...
Yeah.
And it'll just run.
That's mostly true. You know, there's some subtle differences in the way shaders work, and we've done everything we can to make it so you don't have to modify your code. You know, if you go to the edges of the framework, you will find little bits and pieces that need to be tweaked in order to get what you intended out of it.
But for the most part, you pretty much get there. So in a way, it's almost like, I mean, you can write the full-fledged, you know, product for Windows, but it's almost like... almost like an emulator for the 360, to some extent, for the people who want to write for the 360. I mean, can it be seen as that way? Like, this is like a step.
I prefer, you know, the analogy of .NET itself is a better one, right? You're writing to the .NET runtime, and what we've done is brought the .NET runtime over, and the .NET runtime is the platform you're writing to, and we've made it so it works on two different platforms. Right now, there's subtle differences between the two, just because of the nature of the hardware.
Yeah.
Right, you know, got three processors in the Xbox.
Right. So it is going to be a bit different, yeah.
Yeah, there's some subtle differences. If you stick within the 95% of what you would normally do, then you won't see any differences.
So does the coder have to be aware of that when they're writing for the Xbox using this, the three processors and all that?
No. Okay, unless you really want to go there.
Uh-huh.
If you want to go there, we'll let people go and tweak the heck out of it. But in general, you don't need to know about those things.
Okay, well, that's actually very, very good. So that's kind of that's the first, you know, bit of what I really wanted to cover. You know, I plan on doing a series on Xbox and XNA related work here,
and we've got a lot of really good people on the team with a lot of game industry experience.
Oh yeah, I'll be going around and I'll be hitting all you people up and getting as much as I can out of you. But before I go, I wanted you to, you know, I came into the office here and I'm looking around, and I mean, you know, Boyd has some interesting stuff, we'll just say, you know, kind of around the office. And I was hoping you could show people this Capcom device here. This is just cool. So what is this, exactly?
This is actually one of my favorite video games. This is an old JAMA system.
What game is it?
It's X-Men versus Street Fighter. And, he just saw it and wanted to know what it was. And the way they made video games that went into the big stand-up cabinets was they had two pieces. This would be bolted into the cabinet, and then this thing. This is the cartridge for the video game. You slap on it, press it together, and you have a game.
The big thing is the cartridge. And this
right. And then you could pull the big cartridge off and stick other games on.
I just kind of like imagine a home system, you know, where like kids are swapping games, you know, and they gotta go home with like a stack of games in their backpack, you know, and chunk, you know. But
there's a lot of people now who have the old stand-up arcade machines in their houses. Mm-hmm.
You can actually swap the cartridge in and out. That's amazing. So is there actually like a... is that the computer that it's attached
to? It's the full computer. I mean, you're swapping the computer out.
What is it, like a 6502? Or
I have no idea.
You have no idea? Just a weird
thing. I want it to keep working, so I haven't actually.
Okay. All right, well, good. Well, thank you very much for your time, Boyd. And, you know, if you ever want to be back on, you know, to talk about anything, or if you want to send anybody else my way.
I absolutely
want to get around, and I mean, this XNA thing, especially the whole concept of being able to get, you know, hobbyists and students and all that, you know, developing for Windows and eventually for the 360 is just really exciting. I mean, that blows my mind.
And we're really hoping to see some innovative stuff. I mean, there's the video game industry, there's too many games that look alike.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, they don't look alike, but, you know, they play kind of alike.
But you can,
same kind of concepts.
With this, you can get some really, because these kids have, like, nothing on the line, right? There's no risk. They can do the weirdest games that their strange little brains can, you know, come up with, right? I mean, they're at that point in their lives where they're crazy, essentially.
And
you know,
that's what we're looking for. We're looking for wacky, crazy stuff. So.
And, that's really, really cool. It's like a stepping stone into the whole game dev world, so they can get that experience without having to, you know, shell out loads of money. They can just start doing XNA stuff.
Exactly.
So I want to be here, or at least, you know, in this building, you know, talking to somebody when XNA Studio actually ships. I want to be here, and I want to walk through, like, you know, just making, like, a little hello world. And I just want to see it, like, run on an Xbox 360.
Right.
Be able to show that to people at home.
Maybe we can do it before then.
That would be really, really cool, too. Yeah, I mean, if you've got, like, a preview thing, you know, that's, like, one of the privileges, I think, of the blue badge, you know. That's
exactly. I mean, we've got all of that running now.
Oh, really?
Right. Internally, we're going through tests on it. We're trying to make it all work. We have to finish all our security reviews before we release it to the public, but
But
we're going.
You're saying that I could actually, at this point in time, find somebody who would show me.
Yeah, when we're done, we'll go show
it. We'll go do that. Oh, you bet.
Okay, yeah, we're not ready to show it to the public yet, but it's working.
Okay, well, very good. Well, thank you, Boyd. And, yeah, so I will be back, and thank you very much for the interview.
All right.